Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, all you people listening in, you're listening to Blood River Radio. It is August the 8th in the year of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ Almighty God, 2020. And we will serve no one but Jesus, no king but Jesus, said the patriots that fought in the First War of Independence here in the United States. But anyway, you know, we just let Dr. Hill go. He was the director of the League of the South, a dear brother. Also, Rich Hamblin was on for half of that segment. Another dear brother who I'm so proud of having lived to be able to go through to ride to Charlottesville back that day of 8-12-17 when we fought the Battle of Charlottesville there. We all survived. Very proud of that. I've mentioned during the first hour, Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know of that had every single one of our staff members were there, boots on the ground, up close and personal, in the middle of that hellstorm. And you know what? Every one of us, except Jacob, is the League of the South. And he has his own reasons for not doing that because he's an independent writer and he doesn't want to get bogged down and under people's thumbs, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, guys, I'm so proud y'all came on tonight. By the way, people, I forgot to tell you who's gone tonight. It's Ike Baker. Ike Baker, he is the chief of operations. He's following the director of League of the South, Dr. Michael Hill. He just left. Now we have his brother, Ike Baker, chief of operations. We also have my dear co-host. He's almost like a son to me. I don't think he likes me to say that because I'm borderline reprobate, and he's borderline saint. But we will start with the oldest guy in the higher rank in the league. We will start with Ike Baker. How are you doing tonight, Mr. Ike?
I'm doing great, Eddie. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here, as always.
Well, I would have it no other way. I love you coming on. You're one of the few guys left that are the hardcore that we can really count on. There's not too many hardcore guys left anymore. How are you doing tonight, Jacob?
Pardon?
Amen to that. I was just welcoming Jacob on. Jacob, how are you doing tonight, fella?
Doing fantastic, Pappy. Thank you. And, hey, Ike, great to be on air with you again, too. Long time no chat. And I'd also extend a warm greeting to everybody out there in radio land tuning in tonight.
Good to talk to you again, too. We haven't spoken in a while.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I cut y'all off. I'm sorry I jumped the gun. Go ahead, y'all.
No, Jacob, you and I did a broadcast some time back. I don't recall when it was. It was sometime 2019. I thought it went very well. I'm glad to be on the show with you tonight, brother.
Yeah, likewise. That was a fantastic show. We had my friend Tom Goodrich on and Paul mm-hmm. English, both really stellar, very talented guys. And both of them still have a lot of exciting stuff going on too. And yeah, that was a great show.
I'd love to get back on with Tom Goodrich. I bought his book the day Dixie died, imagining that we might have him back to discuss all that. I've still got the book, of course. I'll reread it and brush up on it anytime we can get him back.
Yeah,
I guess, as a matter of fact, I've been in communication with Tom. And matter of fact, we'll be having him on as soon as we can. We're pretty well booked up for about 3-4 weeks. Mm-hmm. But they just now released an audio book of Hellstorm. They've got an audio book. I believe he said they have a video. They have a lot of new stuff that they want to come on Blood River Radio and talk about it. So when we have them on, I'll have you two guys come on and ride shotgun with them. But guys, let me ask you this, Ike. As people know, I got to mention this. This is the first installment of our third anniversary memorial to Charlottesville. Everybody on this show tonight was at Charlottesville. 8-12-17, a day that I'm sure we'll remember to the end of our time. I guess this may be too structured of a question, but let me ask you this, my brother.
Sure.
How special was it to you? How special is it now that you were in Charlottesville with a lot of your dear brothers. I know you had no earthly idea, I don't think, that things were going to get that wild. How special was it for you to be there?
It was one of the greatest days of my life. I said something to the assembled formation when we got together out at that parking lot in that shopping plaza just outside the city limits of Charlottesville. You might recall, I said, this is the greatest assembly of white identitarians I've ever laid eyes on. And it was, and it is to this time, because Charlottesville wasn't the last large pre-announced rally. That was later on, a few months later, in Shelbyville, Tennessee, when we did White Lives Matter. But I listened to the first hour of the show, and I agree with Dr. Hill, there won't be another Charlottesville. We were caught completely by surprise because the paradigm shifted that day. I don't think anyone could have foreseen that sworn law enforcement would stand and just watch mayhem take place. Now, this has become normal over the past 2 months or so, because we've seen law enforcement stand down all over the country. But prior to August 12, 2017, I don't think it had ever happened. And it hadn't happened in Charlottesville when Kessler did his smaller rallies there earlier that year, earlier that summer and that spring. The police enforced the law. I remember the leftists were all hurt and upset that they had been tear gassed to prevent them from attacking Ku Klux Klansmen who were there. So the paradigm shifted that day, and there was no foreseeing that. It couldn't have possibly been foreseen because it had never happened up to that point. We were riding on the wave from Pikeville and from New Orleans when law enforcement authorities did what they're sworn to do. Pikeville was a wonderfully successful, peaceful rally. We didn't pull any punches. We delivered our message just as unadulterated as we do anywhere we go. However, about 500 Kentucky State Police did what you expect state police to do. They kept Antifa off of us, which, frankly, was good for us. We got there as the advance party, ahead of the bulk of the Nationalist Front membership, and there was about 30 League of the South men there versus probably 250 or 300 Antifa. We would have fought like rabid cats, but we would have been overrun, no question. And Pikeville, as a matter of fact, was where I realized what I was part of. I was there listening to men joke and laugh, and reminded me of Marines I served with who have the ability to joke and laugh and make wisecracks during a firefight. So we thought Charlottesville would be like Pikeville. We thought the Virginia State Police would do their job. You may be aware, one of the things Dr. Hill expects me to do is liaison with law enforcement of the various jurisdictions. And I spoke with a Virginia State Police First Sergeant as late as 24 hours before we stepped off onto Market Street. I was on my way there with some other League brothers from Kentucky. And this First Sergeant assured me that Virginia law would be upheld, the mask law would be upheld, assured me. Now, he was probably lied to by his command, but nonetheless, to kind of answer your question, it was the greatest day of my life in many, many years. It ranks right up there with the days my children were born, the days I first heard a shot fired in anger and fired one back. And would I do it again, even knowing how it turned out? 100 times, my answer would be yes. 100 different times, if I was asked, I would go. And the League would have to be there each of those 100 times, because we are the League of the South. Robert E. Lee is a great Southern hero. The park, I still consider it named Lee Park. We were there to protest the removal of that statue. We were under a lawful permit upheld by a federal judge as late as the day prior to our being there. However, the Judeo-Marxist government of Charlottesville and the Democrat governor of Virginia all conspired, and they basically orchestrated a street fight between Antifa and us. Dr. Hill hit the nail on the head. I don't think I could reliably estimate how severely we were outnumbered, but I feel confident it was at least 2-1. We pushed our way in because that's what men do. We exercised our rights. What would have been the alternative? To turn around and go back to the parking garage and leave? Hardly. Anyone who knows us, you fellows were both there. That would never enter our minds. So we pushed through. We occupied the space in the park. We prepared to hear our speakers. The fight intensified. We were hit with all manner of vile missiles from pieces of brick. I was hit in the head. I wear a Kevlar helmet, so I was hit in the helmet. I don't want to misstate, leave the wrong impression. I was hit in the head by a piece of brick or concrete or something. It just rocked my head because the Kevlar was meant to stop a gunshot. But they had what they wanted at that point. They had their mayhem in the streets, and they had their justification to declare us a riot and an illegal assembly, and it was over. I personally didn't get out of Charlottesville until probably 5 or 6 o'clock that afternoon because I tracked down our stragglers for as long as I could, and we had all of our people by name except one. I looked everywhere I could look for him, checked the hospitals, the jails, couldn't find him. So I'm sorry for the long answer, but that was Charlottesville in my mind, and there will never be another day like that. There'll be great days in our future, and there'll be great days when the preservation of our people is decided, but there'll never be another Charlottesville, and we'll always know who was there, won't we?
Yes, we will. And people, we're going to a break. When we come back, I've got a couple of questions for Jacob, and also, Jake, I'm sure Jacob wants to respond to Ike Baker, the chief of operations, who we would follow to hell in a heartbeat. We would follow that man any damn where. We'll be right back, people. Hang on to your seats.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and, by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Well, people, welcome right back. You're listening to Blood River Radio. As you well know, it's August the 8th, the year of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, 2020, and we have Ike Baker on, Chief of Operations. We also have our co-host of Blood River Radio, Jacob Tyler. As you well know, every single one of us that's been on this program tonight were in Charlottesville, boots on the ground, up close and personal with the feral animals, the Antifa, and all that other scum up there on 8-12-17, a day that we will take to our grave. Now, Jacob, son, yeah, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, and you can respond to Ike. But, you know, when Dr. Hill was on previously, in the previous hour, we mentioned prior to Charlottesville, there was Chicago. Chicago was probably about as violent as Charlottesville. In fact, we're going to do a program on the title is going to be something like From Chicago to Charlottesville to Zinc, where to now? Extinction? Survival? Jacob, with that in mind, you know, the first Civil War in the United States was fought primarily in the South. There was a border, you know, the Mason-Dixon line. I'm asking you a question now. With what you see, was Charlottesville, did it portend a future Civil War? Was it the first signal of what we see right now, the tremendous hatred, the tremendous division in this nation that we've never had before? Is that the canary in the coal mine that's going to lead us to this signaling that we are going to have another Civil War? Second part two of that question, Jacob, when we do have that Civil War, say we do have it, will it be fought with no borders? Will it, instead of it being fought primarily in the South, North against the South, is it going to be brother against brother, mother against son? Is it going to be fought in all 49 states, say excluding Hawaii? Is it going to be one mass chaos in every single state, borderless? What do you have? How about that, Jacob?
Well, for the first part of the question, I would say, in a great many ways, yes. As a freelance journalist, part time at least, I have to abstain from being sensational. As an individual, I tend to be a little more, I guess I tend to look at things on a more epic scale and whatnot, and think of everything as a repeat of past history, and think of everything in terms of parallels to past events. So, but in a great many ways, yes, absolutely. Because like Ike was saying earlier, Charlottesville really was unprecedented. We've all seen instances, you know, going back to the 80s and before that, you know, going back to the 50s even, you know, when they brought in the National Guard to basically force integration in the schools at the point of a bayonet. You know, people were not for integration, say what you will about it as a phenomenon in this day and age and all that stuff. But at that time, the American people were not overwhelmingly in favor of integration. And they literally enforced that at the point of a bayonet bringing the National Guard in. And that was back in the 50s. So, you know, we've seen stuff like that going on. But Charlottesville was so unprecedented because I don't think we had seen anything prior to that rivaling in scale a brazen, unabashed, in-your-face example of officialdom. The governor of Virginia, the mayor of Charlottesville, the local police force, who, you know, in all fairness, many of them were obviously lied to and were following orders. And I've heard through the grapevine many times over that a great many people amongst the Charlottesville PD were very frustrated with what was going on that day. So it's not to just tar all of them with the same brush or anyone in the local government either, you know, because in this day and age, we know that people who do actually sympathize with us have to be very low profile. So anyways, though, just for the ones to whom this applies, you know, the collusion between all these people. Okay. Then, of course, we have the jackbooted thugs of Antifa and BLM who were there in droves, who were being bussed in to oppose the rally. And then, of course, in the aftermath of Charlottesville, the big tech was in on it. Big tech was in on it. There is no way that the response from all the tech giants to all the right-wing organizations was in any way even remotely organic, because entire organizations like the League and even Red Ice, alternative news organizations and things like that were banned on multiple platforms simultaneously. You don't – that kind of stuff doesn't happen organically. You can have chain reactions and a snowball effect and things like that can happen in rapid succession. But within a couple of days, this happened across the board. On top of that, entire alternative right outlets and websites were being hacked, like very sophisticated hacking. So this was a full spectrum assault from pretty much every direction at once. And the boots on the ground mayhem that we all bore witness to that day was only a small part of what was going on. They used Charlottesville as a pretext to basically bury us on the internet. And then, of course, all the legal actions that ensued after that. There was, similar to what happened on 9/11 and whatnot, there was all kinds of very, very sensational, clear psyop type stuff going on where people were spreading stories that roving gangs of white supremacists had gone into black neighborhoods and tried to burn the neighborhood down. And then, like, heroic groups of local black citizens of Charlottesville banded together and chased off all the white supremacists who were trying to burn down their neighborhood. That was the actual claim. I had people say that to me. Somebody that I used to go to high school with was trying to tell me that one day on Facebook. I was taken aback. It was the first time I'd ever heard it. It was so outlandish. It was downright comical. But I realized, oh, my goodness, this is kind of like what we were seeing happening with the Oklahoma City bombing and 9/11, where there were all these, you know, who knows who exactly they were working for, but obviously somebody in somebody's employ who were going around spreading really, really over-the-top false stories to smear and malign the right wing and also to spread confusion about what was going on. So, yes, all that to say, for the first part of your question, extremely sophisticated, extremely coordinated, and I like to refer to it as a new day of infamy. That's what I referred to it to as in the article I wrote for AFP on the event. And because we had never seen an instance where the officialdom, all of officialdom from the media on up to the government, was in lockstep with communist revolutionaries, you know, violent extremists, bigoted zealots for the radical left, the radical regressive left, were in open collusion with the government of Virginia on that day. That was what we bore witness to, and I don't think we've ever seen anything quite like that before. So, yes, and that's in those ways and more that I doubt I'm remembering to touch on right now. All of that set a very, very woeful and dangerous precedent, because it showed that not only can the First Amendment rights of red-blooded Americans be violently shut down with absolute impunity, and the media, the so-called conservative Fox News, you know, I like a lot of the stuff that Fox News, I like Tucker Carlson and some of the people on Fox and everything, but Fox News was right out there with CNN and MSNBC all but calling for everybody who attended Charlottesville on our side of the fence to be lined up against the wall and shot. I mean, their rhetoric was so hateful, and the way they just lapped up any and all sensational claims about the event, and they were calling for people to be arrested and everything. So even the conservative news outlets were doing that. So it sets a very dangerous precedent that we might not have peaceful options anymore, and I pray to God that that's not the case. But Charlottesville showed what could happen to us, and thank God that that's not happening everywhere right now. But no one was ever held accountable for that. They're still trying to drag all these organizations like the League through the mud, trying to bankrupt them, trying to shut down free speech on a grand scale. And a whole bunch of these people
League of the South has to go there in October or November. Absolutely, son.
Sure. But,
you know, yeah. We're running close to out of time. Let me just ask Ike. Let me ask you this question before. I know it's a rhetorical question, but I know Jacob will go back in a heartbeat. So I'm going to go to Ike. Ike, Jacob says, "Is it the end of free speech? Is it the end of peaceful remedies? Do we no longer have peaceful remedies?"
Okay, that's coming. I do believe that's coming. It'll be an escalation process to get us there. There'll be a Fort Sumter. I don't know where it'll be. It's impossible to predict. So the answer to that is yes, it is. It's Charlottesville was a precursor, much like as we look back to things before the First American Revolution. The Boston Massacre was a precursor to the First American Revolution. Charlottesville will be a precursor to the Third American Revolution. Because the Civil War was not a civil war. It was fought between two sovereign nations.
I could not agree more. Well, thank you so much, Ike. Thank you, Jacob. We're getting ready to go to our final guest of the night. It will be our dear brother, Gene Andrews. Thank you guys so much
for
coming on.
Liberty
See y'all
News
later.
Wire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with John Hunt.
After spending the day on Capitol Hill, Secretary of the Treasury Steven Mnuchin is beginning to get frustrated as the Democrats and the Republicans cannot come up with a deal to get schools reopened properly.
Time is very important. That's why we're here. We have schools that are getting ready to open. We have kids that need to be protected as they go back to school. We want to make sure that the states have enough money to open the schools safely. Now, the president would like us to make a deal. Unfortunately, we did not make any progress today. We discussed the same issues. I think if we can reach an agreement on state and local and unemployment, we will reach an overall deal. And if we can't, we can't.
Secretary Mnuchin said that President Trump will likely take executive action on some of the relief proposals, including unemployment, if they are not able to break the deadlock with the Democrats. This is USA Radio News.
Can the daily recommended servings of fruits and vegetables fit into just 6 capsules? Yes.
We start by sourcing organically grown whole fruits and vegetables. We ensure they are picked at peak ripeness. All of our produce is third-party tested for pesticides, heavy metals, bad bacteria, and nutrients. They are then washed, cut, and put through an advanced vacuum cold process, which removes the water using pressure. This maximizes the nutritional value while preserving the color, smell, and taste of the fruit or vegetable. The freeze-dried food is then ground into a fine powder without adding any additives, fillers, or extracts. These powdered foods are then mixed in our proprietary blends and encapsulated, locking out air and moisture. The capsules are then bottled and shipped directly to our customers. Balance of Nature is now offering 35% off on any new preferred order. Go to balanceofnature.com today and use discount code USA.
One of Arizona's best-known politicians lost a comeback bid, and USA's Kenneth Burns has more.
Former Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio narrowly lost his quest to reclaim his old job. Arpaio was sheriff from 1993 to 2017. He lost the GOP primary to department veteran and one-time aide Jerry Sheridan by just more than 6,000 votes. This is the second overall election defeat for the 88-year-old. He lost the Arizona GOP Senate primary in 2018, and a year before that, he was pardoned by President Trump for his conviction for refusing to obey a judge's order in a racial profiling case. For USA Radio News, I'm Kenneth Burns.
President Donald Trump will join world leaders as the United States takes part in global aid efforts to help the survivors of a deadly blast that rocked the Lebanese capital on Tuesday. Trump will join a conference call led by France and the United Nations to rally aid and funds in the aftermath of the colossal explosion, which killed more than 150 people. This is USA Radio News.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, people, welcome back to the third. It's probably going to be the hottest segment of tonight's show. We've got Mr. Gene Andrews, our blood brother. Long time League of the South. There'll probably be as long as Dr. Hill himself, according to Dr. Hill. But he's going to be locking the batters in. He's the cleanup hitter tonight for the show. But I wouldn't trade him for all the tea in the China, except, well, he's only done one thing. We sent him a blank check to pay for a book. And the dude charged me $2,000 for that book. I only got 37 cents left in my checking account. And he said, if I don't send that 37 cents, they're going to come break my legs, y'all, so I need donations. How about that, Gene? How much time do I have to raise that 37 cents?
Well, it was a lot of postage. You know, the post office has raised their rates for shipping, so I had to cover that.
Well, I'll tell you what we got to do. Maybe Sam will send us 37 cents. I need my legs, man. I can't run a marathon without my legs. Well, how are you doing tonight, fella?
I'll get that book sent for you. No problem there.
Oh, by the way, I know the title of the book, but Gene, before we go any further into Charlottesville, tell the audience about that book. Why you're selling it? What the proceeds? Where the proceeds go, et cetera.
Well, David Jones had a reprint of "I'll Take My Stand." He had it reprinted for the 75th anniversary. That was published in 1930, And there were 12 Southern writers, professors at, believe it or not, at Vanderbilt University. Not all at the same time, but at one time or another, they all taught there. Robert Penn Warren, Andrew Nelson Lytle, Donald Davidson, John Crow Ransom, Frank Owsley, some brilliant, brilliant writers. And the whole gist of the book, or the theme of the book, was that in the 20s and 30s, Southerners were throwing away their agricultural life and embracing industrialism and rushing to these big cities. And what they were saying is, once you give up the land, you give up a lot of your soul, your heritage, your family. And they were warning that this was going to be really bad for the South. And the interesting part of it, one of the, well, two of the articles or sections that were in there that they wrote about, was they said that rushing to these cities and packing all these people into the cities, if there was an outbreak of some kind of epidemic, it was going to wipe out thousands of people with everyone living that close together. Now, this is in 1930. So they were predicting this pandemic 90 years before it happened. So it's really good reading. And so David had a bunch of those printed up, as I said, and I'm just helping him sell some of those. But the main reason he wanted to get them out is just to get them out into people's hands and let them read about it and see what we've lost in the South, because they had just gone through, of course, in 1918, that influenza epidemic, and they were referring back to that. So that's the book we sent out.
Well, you know, and the proceeds go mainly to, in fact, you know, Rich just texted in. He said that the, I didn't know it, but the League of the South was the one that had that reprint. Is that right, Gene?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's some people, if you will.
With working with the League of the South to get that reprinted. Yes.
Great, great. My ears, you know, don't always work. You may have even said that. You know, people keep me straight. People text in and say, hey, idiot, you need to listen closer, et cetera, et cetera. You know, sometimes I'm thinking a boxing glove is going to come out of my phone and slug me in the head. But people, I can encourage you. I'm going to highly encourage you to get that book. It's a great book. I've already started reading it. I had to go to a funeral last week, kind of interrupted my entire lifestyle for a while. But, Gene, you know, as you well know, as people need to know, Gene Andrews has been a member of the League of the South for a long time, like I said. I'm repeating myself, but that's okay. And Gene was there that day, 8-12-17.
Yes, sir.
August 12th, he was there. I rode to Charlottesville with Gene. One of the proudest days of my life is when me, Gene, Rich Hamblin, Matt, and Simon Roach, we rode up to Charlottesville and back. And we got, as far as I'm concerned, we just became instant brothers, you know. And I can tell you something else about Gene. I think I've said this before, but during when all the mayhem, all the hell was breaking loose, when all those feral animals, all those demon-inspired scum was after us, they were harrying us like, after us like hyenas after a deer or a gazelle, Gene dropped back from the formation back to the, pretty much the back of the formation for the League of the South and the other organizations there to try to fend off some of those hyenas that were after the older and the weaker and the women. And had not been for people like Gene, I'm sure that there would have been more and greater casualties. You know, Rich Hamblin got knocked to the ground. I'm surprised
I was facing the rear of the column, and I didn't see that happening up ahead of me, in front of me, and the blacks got real brave when we were trying to get out of there and had our backs turned to them. That's when they started running off the sidewalk and attacking people from behind. So that's about the last three or four blocks. That's why I was walking backwards and using my flagstaff as a spear to try to nail some of them that were attacking our people from the blind side. So unfortunately, I was looking at the rear of the column and wasn't looking at the front of the column, and that's when Rich got attacked. And by the time I turned around, he was already on the ground, and I poked a couple of people to get them out of there, and then we got him off the street. So I'm always been sorry about that I wasn't looking back and forwards and watching two directions at one time to try to protect our people. So, but it was a revealing day, a revealing weekend. You know, they say that hard times don't build character, but it reveals character. And I think it certainly revealed the character of you and Simon and Rich and Matthew the people that we went up there with to find out what happens to people when they get put in literally in a combat situation. That's basically what it was, except we didn't have the M14s and the M79 grenade launchers and M60 machine guns that we had while we were in country in Vietnam. So we had to kind of improvise our own defenses. But I think the most revealing, that was one revealing thing to me, the character of the people that we went with. The second thing that really hit home to me was how rotten and corrupt the government was. This whole attack was set up, planned, and perpetrated by the government for government censorship. Basically, they didn't want conservative people to go there and speak about defending Confederate heritage and protesting the removal of Robert E. Lee's statue of Virginian from a park in Virginia. And so they decided they didn't want anybody to talk about that, so they brought all these feral animals, as you referred to, and that's being complimentary to them. These thugs, yes, and criminals from Antifa and the Black Lives Don't Matter to other blacks to attack us and told the police to stay out of the way and let it happen. And not only that, I know they all have already talked about this, but we were herded into that park, and it was fenced off on three sides, so once we got in there, we were trapped. And then the Virginia Highway Patrol and that governor canceled our permit. We had a permit to be there, but the Antifa and the black animals did not have a permit. They were just brought there to attack us. And so when they said our permit was revoked and they declared an emergency in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and the Highway Patrol literally dressed up in their Darth Vader outfits with their helmets and shields and everything, literally pushed us out of that park and down off of a 4-foot retaining wall and dropped us down out into the street, into that mob on Market Street. Then we had to fight our way back, and that's when all the mayhem broke loose, and that boy in that car got attacked, and people were climbing all over his car and busting out the windows with axe handles, and he jammed it in reverse to get out of there, and they claimed that he hit that girl, and that was why they put him on trial for and arrested him, and he's in jail now, but she died of a heart attack. The coroner's report said she died of a heart attack. She was tipped the scales at about 400 pounds, and the pictures they put in the paper of her junior high school picture wasn't the same person that was out there on the street that day. So the whole thing was a setup, Eddie. It was just orchestrated by that rotten government in Charlottesville, the rotten government in Virginia, which has turned into a blue state. And that's why when we got back to that dormitory that night, we heard that helicopter crashed, and two of those Virginia Highway Patrol had died in that helicopter crash. The cheer went up because they were breaking the law.
Yes.
They were criminals.
Yes.
And, you know, if somebody
Absolutely.
Robs a bank, gets shot robbing a bank, hey, you don't feel sorry for them. They were breaking the law. Well, these people were breaking the law. They violated the First Amendment. And the bad thing about that was we were wishing the helicopter had crashed about 20 minutes earlier and gotten that Terry McAuliffe, that governor, who was a member of the Clinton crime syndicate. And we may still hear something about him going to Jeffrey Epstein's pedophile island or something like that. I wouldn't be surprised if his name pops up in that investigation. So he was running around with the Clintons and shaking money down for them. So that was part of what was going on there that day.
Well, Gene, I'll tell you what, you've been covering us about all the bases. We got to go to a quick break. I don't know if you can hear the music or not, but you're absolutely right. You know, Rich said that car crash actually happens when the League of the South had already left the park. We'll be right back, people. Hang on to your hats. We got one more segment.
This is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, you're tuned in. It is August the 8th, the year of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ Almighty, 2020. You're tuning into the very last segment of the second hour of the first installment of our Salute to Charlottesville. We're going to have another installment next week. We'll have some people that weren't, one person wasn't at Charlottesville. Well, actually, you know what? Every single one of them were at Charlottesville that we're going to have on next week now that I think about it. They're not all League of the Southers next week, though. You know, Gene, man, I tell you what, you were amazing, young fellow. I tell you, I'm going to ask you some of the same questions that we previously asked the other guys. You know, we talked about Chicago back about 1994, 1995. They had one hellacious riot up there with the Klan, with our brothers, you know, the Robs, Pastor Rob, his family were over there. And there was a bloody fight over there. I've got a photograph of a book with the Pastor Rob, the blood all over his face and neck. You know, and I've made the remark earlier that was prior to the proliferation of the internet and cell phones and stuff. Where if we'd have had that electronic media in those days, it probably would have been maybe in the league with Charlottesville. I don't think the police were involved in the corruption in Charlottesville. In Chicago. I'd have to investigate that more. I think as far as corruption, the police being just totally communist, the governor of the state of Virginia, the mayor, the media, just all, they have all completely gone over to Satanist, Luciferian, communist in that city. You know, a couple of our guys have said they don't think there'll ever be another Charlottesville. You know, looking in history, Brother Rich, there has been a Chicago. 2014, 25 years later, we had Charlottesville. Last week, we had a smaller place in Zinc, Arkansas, outside of Harrison. I guess in numbers, as far as ratio of numbers, it got pretty hot over there. Rich, were we going to, Gene, are we going to have another Charlottesville? And if we do, is it going to kick off a civil war? Are we going to, two questions. Are we going to have another Charlottesville? And if we do, will it kick off another civil war?
We've got Charlottesville in just about every major city on the left coast and the east coast. I mean, you look at Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, and all the things that are going on out there and what's been going on in New York. I've talked to people in New York. They're afraid to get out on the street in New York. They cannot get out and go to the post office. They can't go to the bank for fear of these black lives don't matter to other blacks attacking them on the street and the Antifa attacking them on the street. So to answer your question, I don't think we will have as big a confrontation of a conservative group like the League of the South or the alt-right or whoever, but it's going on right now, and it's been going on for 60 days. These people have Charlottesville brought home to their hometown. I mean, you look, well, you don't have to go all the way out to the left coast. It was going on in downtown Nashville. That idiot that we've got for a mayor in Nashville told these rioters and looters and to maintain social distancing, and so they paid that wimp back by breaking into the courthouse and setting his courthouse on fire. How'd that work out? Yeah, so, you know, it's Charlottesville 0.20 all over again in cities all over the country. I mean, the whole country is going through a Charlottesville, if you want to look at it that way, because you've got the same people, the Antifa, out there doing it, and there's no alt-right or very few people that are standing up to them. The government certainly isn't. They just turn a blind eye to it and say, well, they're peaceful protesters. When they're smashing out windows and setting buildings on fire, attacking the police, and so you've got Charlottesville from Maine to California, just about.
You know, Rich, it looks to me like, and I'm going to ask you this question, is our government in the United States, is it so turned so far to the left? Are most of our people in government, are they really black-hearted, white-hating, Luciferian communist, or are they being controlled by a small minority? I know you have no way of knowing this, just I'm getting you make an educated guess. Or are those people in government being controlled by the very small 1-2 percentile of what Jesus Christ referred to as the sons of the devil in Romans 8:44, I believe it was? He told them that they were their sons, the devil, the devil came to kill, to destroy. You know, he's a liar. He said that he was, when he told a lie, he was a father. He was the father of it. That's all he knew how to do. And will they respond? Well, and I'll get you to answer that question first. What do you think, Gene?
Well, I think people that are in government are politicians. And politicians, the only thing they care about is being reelected and having a cushy job and not having to get out and work at a real job like the rest of us have to do. And so they will do whatever it takes to be reelected. And so if you're in a city, you're going to have to pander to the lowest common denominator in society. These large cities draw the dregs of society in. And not only that, but like in Charlottesville and Nashville, you have universities there. And that's the breeding ground for all kind of crazy wackos to come there. So that's who they pander to keep their sorry political jobs. So I don't know if it's really inspired by evil. They're inspired by being cowards, their cowardly nature, that they're going to pander to whoever's going to pay them the most money and whoever they have to pander to be reelected time and time again. We have that happen here in Nashville. Our representatives in Congress, our state representatives, you get out away from the metropolitan areas in Tennessee, and you've got really decent people and some pretty decent people in the General Assembly. But then you look at the wackos that get elected from Nashville and Memphis and Knoxville and Chattanooga or places like that, and that's where you get the South-hating, Christian-hating, pandering, worthless slugs that grovel at the feet of all these racist hate groups because they want to stay in office. They don't want to get a real job. So they'll say and do whatever they have to keep their phony government job. And to us, it's just abhorrent that you have these type of people representing you in government, but they don't want to represent us. They just want to stay in office. So I think that's where they're coming from.
You know, that's a great answer, Gene. As always, you're always real coherent and Johnny on the spot. But, you know, I've asked this question before to the guys. Do you have, you know, the way things are going right now, in your lifetime, this is a two-part question, did you think you would ever see such a split, such a hatred among groups, like blacks against whites and whites against white. What disturbs me more than anything, and Dr. Hill has said this, Dr. Hill reserves his most virulent venom for these white self-haters.
Yeah.
Is there, you know, in the end, the color, our skin color, and I agree with this, I've heard Dr. Hill say it and other people, I think I've heard you say it, our skin color, their skin color, is going to be their uniform.
Yep.
And the blacks, once they get in power, are they going to tell these self-haters, Gene, are they going to tell them, oh, you helped us get into power, you helped take care of us, you stood by us during the battle, so we're going to let you be in our family, in our club? Or are they going to turn on them and try to get rid of them too, Gene?
I'll tell you right now, they'll turn on them so fast it'll make your head spin. That happened in Rhodesia. That's happened in South Africa. I know one of the terrible, horrible, evil conservative newspapers that I used to get, they showed a picture of a white woman that had just been beaten senseless by the blacks in South Africa after they got rid of apartheid. And that communist thug, Nelson Mandela, and his commie bunch and that African National Congress took over. They turned on her and just attacked her and beat her literally to a pulp. And she was the one that was out there campaigning against apartheid and bring the blacks in and let them run the government and let them take over and let them run the police and all the courts and everything like that. So, yeah, they'll pay you back. And Simon Roach, and I forgot to mention Simon, too, being there, but I apologize for that, but he was there with us. And he's been telling us this for the last several years, that what's going on in South Africa is going to happen in this country. And I thought he was talking about 5 or 6 years, maybe 10 years down the road. I didn't know it was going to turn this fast and we were going to see the terror in the streets and the anarchy that Simon was already talking about that had been taking place in South Africa coming to this country. But it is here, and it is here big time. And the white people in this country better wake up, because going to football games or watching virtual baseball games with no fans in the stand or something like that, that's not going to save you. When these animals come after you, they don't care if you're a big fan of, you know, LeBron James or, you know, anybody, football player or anything like that, that you worship these athletes, that's not going to save you. They're going to come after you, just like you said, because your uniform is the color of your skin, and they're going to annihilate everybody in our uniform that's wearing our color. So that's what my brother says. Make sure you invest in precious metals, plenty of brass and lead.
I've got to remember that. I've got to use that. Well, Gene, this may be a rhetorical question or a self-answering question. Now, is this hatred – I want to ask you, I feel like the majority – of the black people are born. I call it genetic. Is hatred that a majority, if not the vast majority of blacks have for white people, is it genetic? Do they come out of the womb? Or are they programmed to hate white people?
I don't know so much about that, because I've worked with a lot of blacks on construction companies and on my uncle's farm, and they were just outstanding, decent people. But you have a large percentage of that culture that is very emotional, totally irrational. Somebody disses them and they'll whip out a gun and shoot them right there on the spot and don't think of the consequences. So you have that in the culture itself. And where we might think, okay, I don't like Eddie, but I'm not going to run him off the road just because he dissed me or something like that. There are consequences to your actions. They don't think of the consequences, and that's what causes a lot of the violence.
Well, Gene, we've completely run out of time. I thank you so much for coming on, Gene. And I'll just end with a comment. I've been around blacks all my life. I've seen blacks when I was a kid that I would trust, you know, with anything. And they were some of the ones that kicked me harder when the gang had me down. They have that, in my opinion, they have a pack mentality, a troop mentality. It can't be discounted. Thank you again, Gene. Thank you, everybody that came on the show tonight. Thank you, Sam. God bless you. People, tune in same time next week. That'll be the 15th, I believe, and we're going to have part two of the tribute to Charlottesville. Thank you so much, people. Good night.